Welcome to episode 1328 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. As we begin this new year, we are exploring human flourishing by being rooted in God's law. Imagine standing at the edge of the Red Sea with 2 million people behind you. The Egyptian army is bearing down. The water stretches before you, impassable. You have just witnessed plagues that shattered the confidence of the most powerful empire on earth. And then, the sea parts. You walk through on dry ground. The waters close behind you and your oppressors are gone. You are free. But free for what? This is the question that haunted the people of Israel as they wandered into the wilderness. They had been slaves for 400 years. Slavery had shaped their entire existence, their rhythms, their relationships, their understanding of what was possible. Now suddenly they were no longer slaves, but the muscle memory of bondage remained. The habits of servitude were written into their bones. They did not know how to be free. This is the moment into which God gives the Ten Commandments. But the story does not begin at Sinai. To understand the commandments, we need to go back to the very beginning of God's relationship with humanity. Long before Moses, God established a pattern of instruction for his people. When God called Abraham, he said,
"Go from your country to the land I will show you."
And then in Genesis 12, he promises,
"I will make you into a great nation."
But embedded in that promise is a condition, captured in Genesis 18. Abraham is to direct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is right and just. Even in this early moment, we see the pattern. Covenant relationship with God involves living according to God's standard of righteousness. The law is not imposed arbitrarily. It flows from the covenant itself. Even earlier, God establishes a covenant with Noah and gives him laws concerning the sanctity of human life, how to manage animals, and concerning the covenant itself. These are not arbitrary restrictions. They are God's boundaries that enable human flourishing. When Abraham's descendants go to Egypt, they take this history with them. But Egypt was a place where law worked differently. Egyptian law was the pronouncement of Pharaoh. Absolute, arbitrary, disconnected from any notion of universal justice. The Israelites experienced law as a tool of oppression. For 400 years, they knew law only as something imposed upon them from above. Something that served the interests of the powerful. Something that could not be questioned or appealed. So when the people emerge from Egypt, they are traumatized. They have tasted freedom, but they do not know what to do with it. Listen to what happens in the first weeks of their exodus. They arrive at Marah and find bitter water. They complain. They arrive at the desert of Sin and are hungry. They complain and long to return to Egypt, even though they were slaves there. When they reach Rephidim, there is no water, and they grumble against Moses. "Why did you bring us up out of Egypt to make us die of thirst?" Notice the pattern. Freedom without direction becomes anxiety. Liberation without purpose creates confusion. The people are not yet capable of stewarding their own freedom. They need something deeper than just the removal of chains. They need a vision of what they are being freed for. This is the cultural and spiritual context into which God gives the law at Mount Sinai. The people have been freed from Egypt, but they have not yet been formed into a covenant community. They have been liberated from bondage, but they do not yet know how to live as the people of God. 3 months after leaving Egypt, the people arrive at Sinai, and something extraordinary happens. God calls Moses up the mountain and speaks to him.
"You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you will be my treasured possession."
Notice the order. First, God reminds them of his character and his action on their behalf. Then he offers the covenant. The law does not come first. The relationship comes first. The law is the shape that relationship takes. And the people respond in Exodus 19, verse 8. "We will do everything the Lord has said." Then comes the moment of revelation. The mountain shakes. There is thunder and lightning. A thick cloud covers Sinai. The sound of a trumpet grows louder and louder, and the people, all of them, hear God's voice speaking the Ten Commandments. This was not a private experience for Moses alone. This was a community encounter with the living God. Note that there is something different, something profound, something personal about this guidance. The Ten Commandments come as God's direct speech to the entire people. They are not abstract laws handed down from on high. They are the voice of the God who freed them, addressing them personally, telling them how to live as his liberated people. What are these commandments? They begin with three that orient the people vertically, toward God. Then comes the Sabbath. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. For a people who had known only the relentless rhythm of slave labor, the Sabbath was revolutionary. It said, "You are not defined by your productivity. You are not valuable because of what you produce. You are worthy of rest. You are made for more than work." The final six commandments address how the people are to treat one another. These are not arbitrary moral rules. They are the architecture of a society where human dignity is protected, where relationships are honored, where truth prevails over deception. They describe what a community looks like when people are freed not just from external oppression, but from the internal disorders, greed, lust, anger, dishonesty, that would turn freedom into chaos. But here is something crucial to notice. The people were terrified. When they heard God's voice thunder from the mountain, they were afraid. The narrative says, "When the people saw the thunder and lightning and heard the trumpet and saw the mountain in smoke, they trembled with fear. They stayed at a distance and said to Moses, 'Speak to us yourself, and we will listen. But do not have God speak to us, or we will die.'" The encounter with the living God was overwhelming. The holiness of God, the reality of God's presence, the seriousness of the covenant, all of it was too much. The people needed an intermediary. They needed Moses to stand between them and God. And God graciously permitted this. He gave Moses the law written on two tablets of stone. The written law would preserve what the people had heard. It would serve as a permanent reminder. It would protect the covenant. But notice what happened. The direct encounter became mediated. The relationship that had begun with God's voice speaking directly to the people became a relationship mediated through written law and priestly intercession. This was not God's original intent. It was a concession to the people's fear. And over time, this shift would have profound consequences. But before we jump ahead, we need to sit with what God was actually doing at Sinai. God was not giving the people restrictions to control them. God was giving them direction to free them. The law came as God's answer to a fundamental human need. The people had been enslaved. They did not know how to live as free people. They did not know what justice looked like. They did not know what holiness meant. They did not know how to build a community where human dignity was protected and relationships flourished. And God, in love, gave them the law. It was his way of saying, "Here is how to live. Here is what a community looks like when it is built on justice rather than oppression. Here is how you honor one another. Here is how you protect the vulnerable. Here is how you stay connected to me." The law was not imposed despite their freedom. It was given for their freedom, so they would know how to use their liberation wisely. This history matters because it reshapes how we understand God's law, something we have too often misunderstood or forgotten. God's commandments were never a backup plan or a burden imposed on unwilling people. From the beginning, they were part of his design for human flourishing. Long before Sinai, God set boundaries meant to guide life toward wholeness. The law is not discarded by Christ. It reflects God's enduring wisdom. Yet it only functions rightly within relationship. Detached from covenant love, it becomes oppressive. Restored to its true context, as guidance for a freed people, it becomes a joy. As we begin this year, we're invited to see God's commands not as limits, but as the framework of true freedom, offered by a God who knows what we were created to be. The Ten Commandments remind us that God does not merely rescue us from bondage, he lovingly teaches us how to live as free people. His law is not the voice of an oppressor, but the guidance of a redeemer, shaping a community where rest, dignity, justice, and faithfulness can flourish. When we receive God's commands within the context of relationship, they become not a burden to fear, but a pathway to the abundant life we were created for. Father, teach us to trust your commands as gifts of love and form our hearts to live wisely, faithfully, and fully in the freedom you have given us. That's our episode. Remember, God calls you not only to live, but to thrive. Live life to the full, today.